Welcome to the Hinckley Institute of Politics. My name is Joseph Brinton, and I'll be the host for today's Hinckley Forum. The Hinckley Institute was established in 1965 through the generous bequest of the Noble Foundation and by Robert H. Hinckley. The Institute is dedicated to teaching students respect for practical politics and the principle of citizen involvement in government. The Hinckley Institute also offers paid internships to students of all majors here locally in Washington, D.C., and in 35 countries around the globe. The Institute also offers classes, the nation's only campaign management minor, week-long experiences in Washington, D.C., and over $70,000 in academic scholarships. We invite students to go next door or to visit our website at www.hinckley.utah.edu for more information. The title of today's forum is Navigating an International Career. And I will now turn the time over to Dana Sobey, the Associate Director of Career Services, who will introduce today's guest and panel. So please join me in welcoming Dana.
We're happy to have you here today and look forward to hearing from our keynote speaker, Harvey Scott. Harvey's had a broad background that's going to be of interest to you with living situations in eight countries and speaks Chinese and currently working for the Governor's Office of Economic Development in the International Trade and Diplomacy area as a regional director for the Americas. So he's traveling a lot. He's had great experience. I know that you're going to enjoy asking him questions at the conclusion of his talk, but he does have another commitment and will be leaving quickly at the end. So thank you for being here, and thank you, Harvey Scott, for speaking to us today.
There's plenty of room. Come on in. David Utria said you could sit next to him on his lap.
I don't bite.
I'm actually really glad to be here. I'm 39 years old. I finished grad school about 6 years ago, so it wasn't very long ago that I was sitting where you're sitting. And to be honest, I would rather speak to old people than to young people. So I'll just look on the front row.
Is that okay?
I'm just kidding. I'm actually not a native Utahn, so it's great to be here sort of in the heart of Salt Lake City to be able to share some time with you. Dana, thank you very much for the introduction, and thank you to the Hinckley Institute of Politics for allowing the governor's office to come and share a few thoughts with you about international careers and what it might be like for you as you sort of navigate the decisions in terms of making career decisions. So I've had quite an interesting background, I think. I was born in a small farming town in Arizona. I grew up on a goat farm. That's an honest story. And I thought there must be something better than this out in the world than milking goats. And so when I was 19, I'm a Mormon, so I was called to serve an LDS mission, and I served in Australia and had an unbelievable sort of awakening and realized that small-town Arizona is not the place where I wanted to live and raise a family and make a contribution to the world. And so when I returned home, I decided to go to school. My dad worked in the mines in Arizona. I decided to go to school, and I studied business with a minor in Chinese. I lived in Dalian, China. There's an interesting story here, though. My wife is from Utah. Her family has been here since 1847 and had never left. No one in her whole entire family had ever left Utah, including herself. And so we decided to get married, and 3 weeks after we got married, we moved to China. And her dad didn't speak to me for almost a year because I broke the family tradition. So moved to China, learned Chinese, came back, finished schooling in Virginia, moved to Canada and did some consulting there with my Chinese language. From Canada, moved to New York, where I went to grad school at Cornell University and did two master's degrees. Then from Cornell, I got hired by Rolls-Royce Engines, which is the Rolls-Royce PLC group. It's one of the largest aerospace, marine, and oil and gas businesses in the world. from New York, moved to Ohio, where I worked in the oil and gas group for 2 years, and then from Ohio moved to Japan. From Japan, I worked with a British Foreign Office for a year in the British Embassy in Tokyo. And then from Tokyo, moved to England, worked with the corporate group PLC, Rolls-Royce PLC in the UK, moved back to Virginia with Rolls-Royce, and then left Rolls-Royce and started a venture capital group and hated it, and decided to move back to, back west with family. And when I moved back west, we ended up landing this job with the state, which I swore I'd never work for government. But it's been a fantastic experience to this point. I've been doing this now for almost 5 months. So all of that sort of culminates in an incredible opportunity here. Although I'm downtown Salt Lake, which you wouldn't, I guess, necessarily think is an international opportunity, the state of Utah, as you probably know, is regarded as one of the best states in the country in terms of governance, export, the best place to have a business and career. So Utah is really a fantastic place to live. And I feel very lucky, very blessed to be able to bring all of that experience to the state of Utah and be able to help small businesses here in Utah and some large to focus on international business expansion strategy and export. So that's kind of my background. I'd like to introduce a few colleagues, if I could, very quickly. Austin Becker, who's actually part of this this group, I guess, works for me as a fellow. And I'll talk a little bit about our fellowship program in the state that actually we've designed just since I've come on. I've restructured the whole fellowship program. It's a fantastic program. And each of you should apply. We can only hire one or two, but each of you should apply. So this is Austin Becker. Ricardo Romero has become a friend of mine now. He's the trade representative from Peru for all the Western United States. He's a very senior person for the government of Peru, Ricardo. And if you have any questions for these folks sort of after we're finished, they're going to come up here and sit on sort of like a panel, and you can ask them any questions you want. Now, I know Ricardo, he's going to hate me for saying this, but he's got a couple of internships, and he's asked me to tell you to apply for that as well. And David Utria is also a close friend of mine. He's actually from Peru, but he's relocated here to Utah. He's the honorary consul for Peru and is also a business owner here locally in Salt Lake. So he's doing some amazing things. And I get the opportunity to have wonderful people like this come to Salt Lake almost on a weekly basis. I also work with Sheila Steiner. She's with the World Trade Center Utah. She's a fantastic resource for us. We work very closely with the World Trade Center. We're close partners. And we host delegations from all over the world. We've had them just in the last month from Israel, from Turkey, from China, from Taiwan, from Peru, all over the world. So it's a wonderful, wonderful place to have experiences like this. I just want to share a few ideas. A small town Arizona kid, not a lot of exposure to the world until I decided to leave sort of the protection of family and friends. But there are a few ways. How many of you actually are undergraduate students? And how many graduate? So we've got two or three. Okay, good. And how many of you actually have international experiences? How many of you were born in another country and are studying here? Okay. And how many of you were born in the U.S. but have lived abroad? Where did you live?
Me?
Yeah.
Germany.
Germany for how long?
3 years.
Wonderful. And how about yourself?
Hong Kong for about 2.5.
Okay, fantastic. So we have one of the interesting things about Utah, and it surprises all of the dignitaries that come to the state, is how many people in the state of Utah have had international experiences and how many people speak languages. How many of you speak a foreign language? Ricardo, I'd venture to say that any room that you get, wherever you go, you'll not see that demographic. It's amazing. So it's very exciting. This is a wonderful thing. And we have businesses that are looking to relocate to the U.S. or to set up operations in the U.S. They're always amazed at the cultural sort of tolerance that Utah has, because a lot of that has to do, I think, with the Mormon Church. A lot of it's just because we are, I don't know what we are. We extend ourselves. We're multicultural. It's quite amazing. We have over 40,000 Peruvians that live here in Utah. We have about 20,000 Brazilians. We have over 100,000 people that speak Portuguese, right? So we have the number one state for the number of elementary students learning Chinese, Portuguese, Spanish, right? So we are an international state. I think this is why I feel so comfortable here. But let me just tell you a few things to keep in mind as you're sort of thinking about what you want to do with the rest of your lives. And I think that's the key, is really, I didn't know what I wanted to be until I was like 39. It's like this year, right? So don't feel bad and don't feel pressure from your parents. You know, this is your life and you have to be comfortable with who you are and what you choose to do. So I would say take the time that you need to take to make the right decision. Look, you're going to get married someday or not. You're going to have kids or not. And those things are important, right? But you got to be happy with who you are. And you've got to be committed to what you want to do. I've always, since that day that I landed in Australia, I have become an internationalist. Everything I do, everything I touch, has something international in it. And I love it. I love culture. I love language. I love sports. Sports are the language of sort of multiculturalness. You go to Latin America and you can talk football or soccer with anybody and make a very, very close friend, right? So you can go to China and talk about Jiaozi and you can be best friends with the Chinese, right? So you have to really understand and want to know not only who you are, and I think in terms of being able to find out who you really are, you have to interact with lots of other people. So just a few things. I'm going to talk a little bit about internships. When I first came into the office of the governor, they had an internship program, and it was good, and it was positive, and there were a lot of things happening. I really felt, though, that there could be some improvements made. And so what we've done is we've changed the program from an internship program to a fellowship program. And when we hire fellows now, we're actually giving them specific opportunities, specific projects that they are responsible for, not only in terms of idea generation and innovation, but also execution. And so Austin works on a number of projects with me, but he owns them. He's going to deliver these projects. In the middle of this intern or this fellowship, they last anywhere from sort of a year to 2 years. And this fellowship, they're responsible. We are responsible for developing our fellows. So we've put together programs. Every month they have a forum. We call it a forum. And they also will have a lunch and learn. So we invite executives from the community to come in and speak with the fellows, to share their experiences with them, to help them sort of grow and learn and make decisions about the types of careers that they want to have. At the very end of the fellowship, we've actually gone out and made some relationships with businesses, not only here but in the U.S. Sort of broadly, and we have a direct pipeline to their HR school or to the HR groups, and we send resumes and CVs directly to the HR groups, which then means that Austin was going to have an awesome job when he's done with us. Not only because we've helped him be developed as an individual, as a business person, as a policy person, but also as an internationalist. And so these companies will know the type of program that we run and will be honored to hire somebody like Austin. So that's our program. We also have an internship program. Some of those are unpaid and some of those are paid. And I want to talk a little bit about the unpaid portion. A lot of people shirk these opportunities. But all of us have had the chance to take an unpaid internship. And some of us have created the opportunity. So I'll give you an experience that I had. Senator Hatch, I worked for him for 9 months unpaid. And this was before I was going to go on to my graduate studies program. And the reason I did that is because I knew that Senator Hatch is a household name, at least within academia. And it's very easy for him to write a letter of recommendation. And a very powerful tool. And so when you decide to do an unpaid internship, as those opportunities present themselves, don't be afraid to be picky about the types of unpaid internships that you do. This is your leverage. Your leverage is that you are an individual, you are smart, you're talented, you have something to offer, and you can choose the unpaid internship that you want. The thing that you have to do is you have to learn to leverage that for your own gain, right? So when you take an unpaid internship, you need to sit down with a person that hires you and you tell them exactly what you expect out of the unpaid internship. And you need to be very direct about it. And if they can't give you what you need, there are 100 other companies out there that will allow you to do an unpaid internship. Here's a story. Rockwell Times, big, well, not necessarily big, but a prominent company in northern Utah. They build watches. They make watches. And they sponsor a bunch of like MMA, extreme sports types events. They started 3 or 4 years ago. And have been extremely successful. There was a kid, they didn't know it at the time, but he was a high school kid, and he wanted to work for Rockwell Times. And they kept telling him no, but every single day he kept showing up. And he would do like the simplest things. He would take the garbage out, he would clean off the doors, whatever he could do, he wanted to be involved with Rockwell. Well, now he actually runs their entire media production team. This is only in 3 years, and he went from a 17-year-old to a 19- or 20-year-old kid who's actually running this production facility for Rockwell Times, and he travels all over the country. He's gone international, and this is a guy who just showed up, was willing to put in some time, do some hard work, but he used that for his advantage, and he started leveraging every time they would ask him to do something. He would leverage all the time that he had given, and he leveraged it for his own advantage. So if you're going to do an unpaid internship, and I'd actually recommend to all of you to actually have that experience, pick the right one and make sure that you're working with the right people and you ask the right questions and you leverage that for your advantage. It's also an opportunity for you professionally to fill in some gaps, right? So if you wanted to, I don't know, what do you guys want to be when you grow up? What are you studying? You're studying politics or business? And I mean, I'm a business, a whole bunch of stuff, right? So you get exposure to things here at school that are fantastic, but you don't necessarily get practical application. And so if you see that you have a some sort of gap in your skill set, not meaning that you're going to be a chemist or something like that, but in order to speak with the engineering guys, guess what you got to learn? You got to learn how to speak engineering. Right? You've got to learn how to talk their talk. And it's the same if you're talking to the finance guys, or if you're talking to the media people, you have to learn how to talk their language. And if you can use these unpaid internships to learn specific language skills, I've learned in my career that if I can talk their language, I can get so much further along than if I'm trying to make them understand my language. Right? So use the unpaid part of your time, and this could be 2 months, it could be 2 weeks, it could be 6 months, it doesn't matter. But use it to fill in gaps in your skill set. But again, be picky and pick the ones that you think are right for you, that puts you at the highest advantage level. This next point might be a little bit prickly, so forgive me. But you don't know as much as you think you know. And there's a lot to learn out there. I learn every single day how much I don't know. And I think one of the keys in terms of being successful in your professional career, is always be in the mindset of learning. You can teach as you go along, you know, because people will come to you to teach, to learn from you. But always be in the mindset of learning. I can learn something from every single person in this room. I know I could. If I could sit down with you for just 2 minutes on an individual basis, I could learn something from you. And that would make me a more sort of rounded person and more sort of experienced. So be humble about an unpaid internship. Be humble about an internship. You know what you know. You don't know what you don't know. And realize that about 90% of what you think you know, you don't know. Does that make sense? So just be humble and be teachable and go out and want to learn what the world has to offer. Three, I think, is pretty important. How many of you have a LinkedIn profile? Hands high, please. Actually, it's probably better. How many of you don't have a LinkedIn profile? All right, so the world has changed. And for those of you who are younger than me who have not jumped on that bandwagon, you got to catch up. Because this world really is about who you know. The way I got this job was not because perhaps I was the most qualified, but it was because a friend of my friend knew the guy who was making the decision. and happened to be able to get my resume in front of him. Right? So network, 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 network. It is the name of the game. And if you don't know how to network, talk to somebody who's good at it. Ask them. And this goes back to the learning thing. Be humble about it, but really learn how to network. Learn how to make connections. Learn how to ask the right questions. Learn how to be interested in other people. Does that make sense? Would you rather talk to somebody who talks to you or somebody who listens to you? Absolutely. So listen to people. Learn about them. And I can promise you, if you can flip that in your mind and be more interested in engaging somebody else to speak to you, you will make friends much, much faster. People know a lot of stuff, right? So just listen and network and be available and extend yourself to people. Part of that word is work, right? So networking is not an easy thing to do. It takes time, takes a lot of effort, right, Sheila? Right? She's been around long enough. She knows. You should see the number of people she knows. She knows everybody. And it's because Sheila has the right type of sort of mental attitude. She's very engaging and very warm, but she's more interested in what I'm doing than interested in telling me what she's doing. And I think that's an important piece. She's very good at that. So work at it. And I wouldn't have my job unless I had sort of leveraged my network. And the other piece is, and it kind of goes back to this Rockwell story, and it's really about persistence. How many of you really know what you want to do with your life? So if you were, what do you want to do?
I want to be a speech therapist.
How am I doing? Very cool. Any international piece on that?
Not really, because you have to know like a whole different alphabet and how they speak.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Do you speak a foreign language?
Learning.
Okay, good. Awesome. So I would say that for me, you know, the window starts like this, and then it gets wider and wider and wider, right? So when I'm in Arizona, actually, I should say it starts like this, because all I knew about, you know, in Arizona was mining and, like, picking up rocks, and, you know, hunting rattlesnakes, those types of things. But as you learn, your perspective obviously broadens, right? So you're at a time right now where you can sample a whole bunch of stuff. You can change your life. You can change the way that you've been raised. You can change the things in your mind that keep you from being who you really want to be. This is the time. When you finish school, it's much, much more difficult. But this is the time where your brains are malleable. You've got enough time to do whatever you want to do, really. I mean, think about it. Be persistent in what you want to be. Narrow it down by what I call by degrees. If you know you like to work with people, you can look at all of the industries whereby you work with people. You probably won't be a great engineer if you really like a lot of people. You won't be a great chemist, right? Because these guys typically like to work in dark rooms and blow stuff up or whatever, right? So you probably won't be great at that. But if you like people, you can narrow down your career choices, you know, by degrees. And eventually you'll land on what it is that you want to do. I've been very lucky and very blessed in my life to have the opportunities that I have, and you know, some of those I've created, some of those I've landed in. Never underestimate the power of luck. Sometimes you're just in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing, and typically those people are the people I really hate because they just land on their feet every time. You know those people. So, and this is where persistence really does play a key role. If you know what you want to be, don't settle for anything less. You know, that's all I really have. I'm grateful to be here. Do you have any questions for me specifically that I didn't touch on or that I might be able to answer for? Yeah.
So if I have a question, please speak clearly into the microphone, state your name and a little bit about yourself.
You gonna make it?
Hi, my name is Amber Anderton. I'm a political science and strategic communications double major. I have heard that you have to be affiliated with the party of the governor in order to work in the at the state capitol. Is that correct?
I'm with a Green Party. No, it is not correct. Absolutely not correct.
Okay.
That's a great question. I think that's a fair question, but no, that is not correct.
That's something that's determined from pursuing anything.
Well, I don't know where that rumor might have come from. And I think sort of naturally there might be an assumption that would be the case, but it is not the case. The governor is very open to both parties. He represents all the citizens of Utah, not just the Republicans. So he's very open to that, as am I. So.
I'm Parker Finlinson. I'm a business student here, and I just got back into the country from a mission down in El Salvador, and I really want to do something international, but I'm really kind of getting back into school. I'm not sure where exactly to start. Where would you recommend, like, as an internship or something that would be good to really get started?
I think honestly, Parker, it depends on what you want to be. You know, I could tell you to go do an internship at a hospital, but it might not have any effect on your life. So I think part of this, it's a process, right? You're not going to discover who you're going to be tonight. Maybe you would, but I think that's doubtful. I believe in processes. I believe that we become, we don't just be, right? We become something. So there's a process that we all have to follow. And as much as we would like for all the pain and all the suffering and all of the growth, the stretch that happens from the process to go away, it's not. So just get used to a process. The process of trial and error. You know, maybe Parker, you should try to do an internship at a place where you don't think you'd like to work. You know, go volunteer for a month at some place that you might really hate. But you might find that it changes the way you think. So I can't answer that for you. I don't know, but I can tell you that if you do some reflection, go up to the mountains, walk around a bit. I'm dead serious about that. The mountains do something for me. I go out in the mountains, I walk around, and I think about things, and somehow my mind clears. So I would suggest that for all. And now, if you all go on a hike at some point, please invite me along. I'd like to go. Yes.
Hi, thank you very much. My name is Alit. I'm a political science major here. Thanks for the excellent stories. I have a question for you about how to adapt to a new cultures, and what do you think is the best way to immerse yourself in new cultures? And I do really experience it myself, because it's kind of difficult to learn another culture this quick, the new language, a new food. And could you provide me a best way to... probably people experience homesickness or something like that.
Sure,
thank
you. That's a great question, and I think one of the great things about my experiences internationally is that I really, at some point, you feel like you're part of the culture. Now, living in England, that was much easier because I look like I could be from England, but in China, that was very difficult. In Japan, that was very difficult. But there was a point in my life when I was living in China. And this is a great question. Thank you. We went there. How much time do I have? This is a funny story. So we landed in the Beijing airport, my wife and I. And of course, we didn't speak Chinese. We had no idea what we were doing. My wife, the first time she'd ever traveled abroad. And we thought we were being smart. We packed all of our stuff in these 3-foot-long, 2-foot-deep blue bins, those big tubs that you can buy. All of our stuff was in that. So we got them off the airport, and we were trekking along. We had them on our carts, and we could not find an elevator, but we had to get to the top floor. And so I thought, okay, let's be smart. There's an escalator. We'll just push the little trolleys on the escalator and go right up, and we'll be fine. There was another young woman that was with us, and she pushed her cart on first, and then myself, and then my wife. So we had about 9 pieces of luggage, and 3 people in between all this luggage. Well, when she got to the top, her trolley was pretty heavy, and the wheels kept spinning. So the escalator kept moving us up the escalator, and she was trying to push her trolley off, and she couldn't get it off. And so all of us just tipped over into the lobby, and all of our stuff spread everywhere, and all the Chinese were looking at us. And I thought they were yelling at us, because when you hear Chinese, it sounds like they're yelling at first. And they're like pointing at me, and then they're right across the way, there was an elevator. And we felt so stupid. Anywhere else in the world, perhaps, we could have hidden somewhere, but we were these tall, ugly Americans, and we had no idea, right? And so I learned something very valuable at that point, is that I am now part of China. My life is in China for the next year. There was no sense in me trying to be anything other than Chinese. I accepted the fact that I was not an American anymore, right? By passport, I was. And in my heart, I'll always be an American. But there is something about embracing a culture that will change you forever. It really will change you forever. And I've had this wonderful experience in 8 different countries. I've lived in Senegal, I've lived in Uruguay, Canada, Australia, England, China, Japan, and the US. And I've traveled to probably 50 countries. And everywhere I go, I want to embrace who they are. Because by doing so, I learn more about who I am. Right? And then that culture becomes part of who I am and who I want to be. So learn the language, eat the food. I had some of the worst food of my life in China, but I had some of the best as well. And I had some of my best friends are Chinese, and I love them. I love them like my own family. So I think that's it. You have to open yourself up to be vulnerable. You have to open yourself up to truly being disappointed, just like we are here. And you have to allow yourself to love people and be loved. I know that sounds a bit sentimental, but it's true. And I think once you learn to be comfortable with doing that, you can embrace other people, and other people they can embrace you as well. Heather, you probably have the same experience. You've lived all over the world, so.
I was just saying to Sheila, I remember praying that my skin would turn brown.
Absolutely, absolutely. It's true.
I did not perform.
When I was in Senegal, of course, the Senegalese, they're beautiful, beautiful culture, Muslim culture. They speak 6 or 8 different languages, mostly French, but they have Wolof and a whole bunch of other languages. And I needed a haircut. And they don't cut white guys' hair. And so I went to this big, huge bazaar. And this guy that was standing there, I went up and I just sat in his chair and I said, "Hey, can you cut this?" He goes, "I've never cut a white man's hair." I said, "Well, just give it your best shot." And it was a great haircut. He only cut me twice, but it was good. Please.
My name is Annie Weixler, and I want to be a teacher. So what do you think I could do as a teacher to, in the future, make my classroom more comfortable for international students?
That is a great question. Thank you. And, you know, I've got 5 children. They've been born all over the world. And they've gone to, different schools all over the world, Japanese schools and English schools. I think of what I said about going to other cultures. I think I feel the same way about when other cultures come to our country. Other cultures need to be comfortable with embracing who we are as a people. That doesn't mean that you can't help them culturally. But I think awareness is probably your biggest asset. Being aware of where they're from. That Peru is not Chile, is not Brazil, and it's not South America necessarily, right? So be aware of where they're from, what their needs are, what their expectations are. And I think talking to parents about that as well, I think that's a very, very important thing. My daughters, when we moved from England to the U.S., and they had these little beautiful British accents, which I hated for them to lose, our biggest concern was the pedagogy and the methodology of teaching in England is very different from the U.S. And so we were concerned that they wouldn't be able to make that transition. But honestly, I'm sorry, what's your name?
Annie.
Annie, children are the most resilient things I've ever seen in my life. They adjust and they'll do just fine. So I appreciate the question. I think that you're aware that there are some cultural differences and perhaps some nuances. I think that means that you're going to be a fantastic teacher. Because it's not just international cultures, right? You get a kid that moves here from Louisiana or from New York City, different cultures as well. So thank you for that.
Hi, my name is Lavinia Tamoy-Piao, and I'm a political science major. I'm also interested in going on to like public policy and also international relations. My question to you is, I've always had this notion that in order for me to be able to do something with maybe international law or that deals with international relations, I would have to leave Utah. Yeah. So your fellowship. Can you talk a little bit about your fellowship first? And then also, I went on an internship probably last year, which was the first time I ever left the country. And
where'd you go?
Tonga. Through the Hinckley Institute. And cool. That was my country of my ancestors' origins, but I was like, it was my first time ever leaving America, so I knew how really American I am. But can you talk a little bit about how long it took you to actually learn the language when you moved to China?
Sure.
And how difficult it was.
Sure, yeah. So there are a few questions in there. The first one, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of companies in Utah, right? So the idea that you have to move somewhere to do something international is a misnomer. All of these companies, if they're selling something in Utah, they can sell something in Peru, right? So it just takes a little bit of sort of forward thinking and the right person to go in and say, hey, if we can do this here, why can't we do this in Tonga or in Peru or in Senegal, right? So you can do international from right here in Salt Lake. In fact, I'd argue that there's no better city or state in the country to do international. You've got some wonderful opportunities here. About the fellowship, I'm not sure exactly what you want to know about the fellowship, but the fellowship is a fantastic program. We just started it. In fact, we're launching it officially. What's the date today? Today. So we're redoing the whole website, everything. So if Stan in the back. So I'll be working with Stan on internships and fellowships. So please talk to Stan about your interest. We will have a fellowship page posted on our GoEd site or the Governor's Office of Economic Development. We'll have all the information posted there. And that program will grow over time. In terms of the language, how many of you speak a foreign language? When did you know that you really were speaking a foreign language? When you dream in that language, right? When you start dreaming in Chinese or when you start dreaming in English, if you start dreaming in Japanese, you know that your mind has made the switch. And there literally is a switch. If you've learned a language, and I should speak better Spanish, David, I'm sorry. But when you learn a language, I feel something in my brain. I know that sounds weird, I'm sorry, but there's something that changes in the way that I think about the language, because it's not a translation for me anymore. It's a direct, you know, you don't have to think about the English word and then translate it to Chinese or to Spanish. You just know how to say it and it comes to you. So the language can be tough. And the only way, in my opinion, the only way to learn the language is to immerse yourself in it. And that means live there, be it, do it, speak it, dream it, think it. You've got to really embrace the language. Because otherwise, you can get around and order a piece of pizza or something, but it's going to be really difficult to be successful in the language unless you live there and embrace it. David. Yeah, please, Ricardo.
Something about internship.
Please.
A lot of words of wisdom, Harvey. It's very good. I just want to take the opportunity, first of all, to thank for the invitation. It's the first time I come to Utah. I've been very impressed with what I've seen so far. I was being asked by many people in California, why are you going to Utah for? And, well, I found a lot of the answers. It's been great. But I want to take the opportunity that, you know, Harvey mentioned. We have an internship program, our office in Los Angeles. I know it's not in Salt Lake City, but it could be something that would be of interest to you, especially those who have international experience. What we do exactly, we promote Peruvian companies into the United States. We do business matching, supply and demand. We help Peruvian companies to export their products into the United States. And we also help U.S. potential investors in Peru. We work with different kinds of projects, infrastructure, mining, agriculture, and so on and so forth. So with the internships, what we do is for every intern, we give them a project to work on for 4 months, 5 months, depending on the time the internship will run for. And we do this every year. We had interns from all over the U.S., actually, especially during the summer. We have students from Chicago, University of Chicago, from Harvard, you know, Berkeley, USC, UCLA, a lot of big universities. So it would be, I think, a good opportunity if you're interested in pursuing an experience with an office from a foreign country. You know, you would not only learn about the business of that country, but you would also learn about interacting with people from other countries. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for you guys who are, some of you, looking to pursue a career in international affairs. You know, about the question you ask, I have to say, you know, I've been asked the same question many times by the interns, you know, that some of them don't know the answers to their careers. You know, when you're 21, 22, you know, when I was that age, I didn't know what I wanted to do either. But what I always say is that you have to, you can go to the mountains, go to the beach, wherever you want to go. But I know, but depending where you are, you know, you can go to the lake, actually. But I think, at least for me, that was my experience. You know who you are, you know what you like, and I think you can find the answers pretty easily, you know, based on your experience. You got to look back and see what have you done in your young professional career while you were going to school that motivates you the most related to the experiences you have had. And that's where you will find your answer. That's what I did. You know, I've been in international relations and international trade for the last 18 years, and I was not wrong. You know, I went to law school in Spain because my father was a lawyer, and I wanted to become a lawyer, but I hated it. After the first year of law school, I said, this is not for me. You know, I quit without knowing what I wanted to do. From Madrid, I moved to California. You know, I went to school there. I was an undeclared major in a university. But then I did exercise. What I wanted to do in law school is to become an international lawyer, international law. I knew that much, that whatever I did had to be international. And what I'm doing today is international. And that's what I've been doing for the last 18 years. I've also lived in many countries as well, and I travel everywhere. So I think all of you, when you have this doubt, you just have to step back and look at who you are, what you like, what motivates you the most, and I think that's where you will find your answer. Anyways, if you want any information, please, you can contact me through Harvey, or I can give you my business card, and you can email me, and we can, you know, talk about it. Thank you for having me.
I just wanted to say thank you very much to the Hinckley Institute. They are wonderful to the Peruvian consulate. They provide amazing interns. And I would like to extend this invitation to all of you. If you are interested in an internship here in Salt Lake City, in downtown, we have an amazing program there for those that want to work in a mission in the consulate of Peru. Everything's in Spanish, so you are required to speak Spanish, and you need to speak Spanish. And so those that want to practice their Spanish, this is a great opportunity. You get to talk with people, do a lot of their documentations, something that you don't get to do in other diplomatic missions. So it's open. You can just contact me or contact, actually, Lindsay Sisumbo, from the Hinckley Institute. She's the one that runs the program with the consulate. Thank you so much.
You're not required to speak Spanish, by the way.
in the consulate, yes.
Parker, did you hear that?
Yeah.
All right. I'd like Austin, if you wouldn't mind, Austin Becker, to come up just for a minute or so and tell you about his experience as a fellow. I think hearing it from him is probably more important than hearing it from me. So thanks, Austin.
Hi there, I'm a student of the U. I'm in the MIAJ program, and I actually heard about this internship thanks to my excellent program manager, Christy Reeses. I think you're sitting back there. There she is. So, as far as internships, the one thing, I mean, I could say a lot. I guess I have time to say one thing, but I just want to reiterate what Harvey said about networking. I'm not good at that. Harvey's helping me get better at it, and Harvey's helping me with it, but as much as you can, get to know your faculty and the university, the staff that you work with, and your teachers. But if you can get out there and speak with people at businesses in Utah and get your face in front of them, that's really the best thing, because, of course, people hire fairly. They hire based on what's in your resume, things like that. But you do have to do that. You have to network with people, get your face in front of them, and have them remember your name, because that's the only thing that's going to make your resume stand out. So I'm glad we have this focus on internships at the U here, because that's very important. I feel very lucky, and I thank Christy and Harvey Scott very much for helping me in my life and my career. So, yeah, that's all I have to say for now. Love to say more, but I'm in charge of the time, so I'm making us leave. Sorry.
Just quickly, thank you very much. I've enjoyed being with you today. Thanks so much.